Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Social selling is gaining popularity at breakneck pace, which is great because it allows sellers to be more personal and forge real connections with their customers, but it also poses challenges. You need a new set of skills to convert connections to conversations. Your LinkedIn presence and profile need to be optimized. You need to create content and build a following instead of just sending those one-to-one messages. And you need to find a way to help your audience sell for you. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about how to sell using LinkedIn. She is the LinkedIn Whisperer and CEO of Social Sales Link. For over a decade, she has been teaching entrepreneurs, sales teams, and business leaders how to leverage LinkedIn for social selling. Bryn Tillman, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Sarah, I am thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
So excited to have you on the show. To start us off, Bryn, I'd love to hear from your perspective what people are doing wrong on LinkedIn today.
Oh, there are so many things, but I'm going to say three. So the first, and I think the biggest mistake, is connect and pitch, right? And we've all been victims of this. And I use the word victims not lightly, but we are, right? Like there's this, hey, let's connect on LinkedIn. And then immediately we help businesses just like you do this, this, and that, right? And I think a connect and pitch is a bait and switch. You would never walk up to someone at a conference and, hi, Sarah, I'm Bryn Tillman. We help companies just like you. You wouldn't do that. So one of the things that we forget is there's a human being on the other side of these messages. We just think it's leads. And so we have to really kind of slow down our outreach to speed up the outcome, right? We've got to start more authentic conversations, show up as a resource. The sale will come when the time is right. So connect and pitch is the worst thing, I think, on LinkedIn. Funny, the second worst thing is connect and forget for salespeople. We do this all the time. My guess is if you're listening to this today, you have 500, 1,000, 5,000 connections on LinkedIn, and you probably haven't talked to 90% of them. So it's time to take inventory and go back and take a look at all of the people we're connected to that we want to engage. It's the low-hanging fruit, right? Like as people in a business development role, whether you're in sales or you're the CEO that's selling for yourself, we're out there going net new all the time. And really what we're doing on LinkedIn is collecting business cards, sticking a rubber band around them and putting them in the corner of our desk. We need to take out those cards. I say export your connections and conduct a little CPR. We're bringing them back to life, but we're identifying clients, prospects, and referral partners that are in our network that we want to start conversations with. And we can definitely talk about clever ways to do that in a little bit, because there's still number three, which is random acts of social. Anything we do in the world, if we do them randomly, we get random results. So as someone that's looking to use LinkedIn as a business development tool, we need to have a process around it, a cadence around it. We need to go to market on purpose. So those would be the three mistakes I think people are making.
Awesome. And how has LinkedIn changed as a platform? Because once upon a time, it really was like a place for job seekers and job posters, and that was about it. How has it changed and kind of why? Like, why did it gain this momentum as this other type of platform?
Well, you know, it has morphed many times since I've started using it. There are a lot of features that are no longer available and new features that are fantastic. Granted, there are some features I'm sad they've retired because I think they were fabulous, but for whatever reason, you know, it's interesting when you hang your shingle on somebody else's house, you got to deal with kind of, you know, the way they rearrange the furniture. But it has changed and it has morphed. And a lot of it is because I believe there's I guess two reasons. Number one, every professional is on it because it was a primary job seeking / recruiting tool for so long. Anyone that changed jobs in the last 15 years is on LinkedIn. So they have the most data. Number two, it's self-updated. So you go out and buy lists. Those, they're scraping data, they're calling people, they're trying to update data. LinkedIn is self-update. I get a new job, I announce it, it's all current. So I believe that LinkedIn is the most current information and data on people. Number three, the ability to search and filter from a business development perspective is phenomenal. Even the free LinkedIn has incredible filters that helps us to hone in on exactly who we want to meet. So does Sales Navigator, which I love, but that's, we could talk about that at another time. But the to be able to identify exactly who we want to meet is incredibly easy. And we can, through search, we can search our first degrees and identify those people we've been connecting. And then here's the magic. And this is what LinkedIn does better than any other platform. In fact, I think it may be the only platform that does this, is it allows us to search our second degree connections and map out our social proximity to a potential buyer. So by searching, I want to find CFOs in the greater Philadelphia area in marketing, right? And I want to find, you know, in media, in any, in a lot of industries, right? In any of these industries, I can hone in and I can click on second degree relationships and I can see how many of those CEOs I'm one degree away from. And if I've done a good job of nurturing my network, I can then get introductions, referrals, or permission to name drop and really gain access to these buyers at a very high level of credibility.
That's so interesting. That's such a good strategy to have. And then it really kind of highlights the fact that you do need to have a great social selling strategy for those first degrees in order to be able to leverage them. And of course,
exactly.
We touched on that in the intro, and we're going to touch on exactly how you can get those referrals a little bit later. But for now, I'd love to go back to those three points that you touched on in what people are doing wrong and talk about how salespeople can flip those on their heads and start doing them right and kind of go out and start taking the steps to improve them. So first one was your connect and pitch. What should you be doing instead?
So it's, you know, social selling really is about being a resource, providing insights, being a value, understanding that the sale will come when the time is right. So when you connect with someone for the first time, number one, do a little social listening. Look at their profile, look at their activities, look at the content they're sharing, and approach them on their terms. Right? You know, Sarah, thanks so much for accepting my connection request. I noticed you engaged on Larry Levine's Selling from the Heart podcast. I love that podcast. Did you hear the one that Shari Levine was on? I'd love to share that link with you if you're interested, right? It has nothing to do with me. I'm engaging you. I'm engaging with you on your terms. That's where we start the conversation. It feels so authentic. But what we're doing is we have to slow down the outreach to speed up the outcome. We have to take the time to personalize it. This is not a spray and pray kind of, it just doesn't work on LinkedIn. What works on LinkedIn is really building relationships. You know, Bob Berg, who's the author of The Go-Giver and Endless Referrals, is the famous quote that everyone knows, all things being equal, people do business and refer people they know, like, and trust. So how do you get to know on LinkedIn? You have to track, teach, and engage, right? We have to track them to us. We have to teach them something new that gets them to go, oh, that's interesting. And then we have to create that compelling moment, the engage piece, so that we're moving them from lurker to engager. And that's where we can start the conversation on their terms. Did that answer that question?
Yeah, okay. Definitely it did. So I'm curious about this engaging on their terms be? So the you attract them because you're creating valuable content, right? And then the you're teaching them something valuable through the content. That's what makes it valuable. And then you're kind of getting them to engage on your content before you actually reach out. So what we're saying is it's never like cold outreach. We kind of let that stuff happen first.
Yeah. And so there's the content piece and there's the referral piece, but those are kind of go hand in hand, right? So, but I would say like the engage piece, even it doesn't even have to be on the content you shared. Go find an influencer that's attracting people. So, you know, Sarah is an influencer with predictable revenue and she posts something and lots of people engage on that. And I want to engage with the people that are engaging with her. So now I'm going to go back to them and go, I see that you're engaging with, you know, Sarah Hicks content. I don't know if you heard the podcast from a couple of weeks ago where she interviewed ex-influencer. Let me know if you're interested. I'm happy to send you a link, right?
Got it.
We're talking about you know, the influencer. It's like if you walked into an event and Sarah Hicks is the keynote and all the people in the audience are talking about like, you know, oh, I can't wait to hear her talk about this. And I can't wait to hear her talk about that. Right. That's a normal way to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. We may in the back of our head say, I'm also here because I want to, you know, build some relationships that could turn to business. As salespeople, you know, that's often in the back of our head, but we have to calm that voice down a little bit, build rapport, eventually share insights that lead to your solution, but you don't have to start there, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, you know, we've got some conversation going and I'm not sure if this topic is of interest to you as well, but I've got some free resources I'd be happy to send you, and ask permission at that point to send your content. Don't ever send your content until they say, yes, I want it.
Okay.
But once you have this conversation going, particularly if, you know, it's around predictable revenue and I may now say something like, obviously, this is a topic that's near and dear to your heart. It certainly is to mine. I'm not sure if you're exploring ways that LinkedIn can help you with your predictable revenue, but if you are, let me know. I'll send some resources. Ask permission. Don't just send your stuff. You could send a Forbes article. You could send somebody else's podcast, but don't ask permission before you send your own stuff. Yeah. And you're respecting their inbox. They feel way less spammed. You've also created FOMO, because if you just send the link, they could click anytime. But at this point, they don't have the link. So the only way they can get it is to respond to you. And it continues the conversation.
Okay. That's very interesting. I like that. How do you know when it's kind of the right time to start to drop in your own stuff? How do you start to convert that conversation into a conversation about your own solution?
Yeah, usually I recommend there's two or three other touches, but you know, you have to be crafty about leading to your solution with, you know, the content that you're sharing with them should in some way, shape, or form link back to what you do in some way, right? And so, you know, the conversation is around, in this case, you know, predictable revenue podcast episodes. So we're starting with that conversation. They're like, oh my God, that was awesome. I really loved that. Right. And then the transition is, you know, I really loved that too. Here were some of my takeaways. I'm not sure if you're exploring other ways to do that, but if you are, I have some free resources I'd be happy to share with you. Let me know. I'll send a link. So you want to make sure you're not, the content that you're sharing is at least in the realm of what you do.
Right. That's got to be a logical kind of transition between the one to the other. And that makes sense, because if you're trying to be a trusted advisor in your space, the content that you know of and are engaging with is probably going to be somewhat related. So totally makes sense. And then, okay, the next piece that people are getting wrong a lot of the time these days is that connect and forget, which honestly I have been guilty of, especially when you're using like a sales engagement tool to do your you send your connection requests and then they're there, but it doesn't pipe that information back over to your sales engagement tool. And then it's literally lost forever and you just forget. What should people be doing? How do you re-engage them? How do you not forget?
Well, the first thing I'd say is don't use those sales engagement tools. This is about building relationships, not collecting business cards and sticking rubber bands around them. It just is not effective. And it also breaks LinkedIn's agreement. So you have to be really careful around that. That said, you've got these connections now. What do I do? And that's where we conduct CPR. Export your connections and go through them and say, you know, who are the clients? Who are the prospects? Who are the referral partners I want to engage? And my recommendation is kind of this two-step process for each one. So let's start with prospects, because that's what we're all thinking about, right? We want to identify what's a question. I want to turn this into a poll. What's a question that our buyers would want to engage on and create a poll that's not just about the answer I want to get, but something they'd be interested in the answer to. They want to engage and they want to see how other people have voted. So be really careful in crafting that. Once you've done that, hop on your mobile, click on the three dots at the top right of that poll and copy the link. Then from your spreadsheet of the people that you want to engage, send a video message. Sarah, I hope you're doing well. I just published a poll on what predictable revenue means to you. And I'd love your one-click vote. Once the poll closes, you'll get the results so you can see where you benchmark with your peers. Thanks in advance. And then it's a video. And then I post the poll, the link to the poll, and send it. It's all of 30 seconds. So if I've identified, you know, 20 people I want to get this in front of, it's an under 10 minute exercise. And a lot of people go, well, 10 minutes to get to 20 people, I could do so much faster with a bot. But you don't create the rapport and the relationship. And this is where, when we slow down the outreach, the outcome speeds up. It's so fast, right? Spending 10 minutes to send 20 video messages with a link to a poll is going to get you so much more engagement than 500 connection requests.
Yeah, absolutely. What kind of response do you generally see back from that type of message and video?
Yeah, we're getting about a 50% rate vote on the poll when we're sending right. that out. That's pretty cool. High, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. For them not only to read your message, but go out and do the thing that you've asked them to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you paste the link to the poll, it actually embeds the poll in the message. So they can just vote inside the message, which is really great. And the other thing now is we have a little insight. So we have something else to start a conversation with. In 2 weeks from now, Sarah, thanks so much for voting on my poll on predictable revenue. I noticed, you know, you voted that having a process is 100% essential to predictable revenue. If you're interested, I've got additional resources I'd love to send to you on this. Mm. Let me know. I'll send you a link. Okay. And you can do that with connection requests too. So, you know, you're going to personally reach out with video to your first degree connections, but about two thirds of the people that vote are beyond your first degree. So vet them out and you send a connection request that says exactly that. Thanks so much for voting on my poll. I've got additional insights that I'd love to share with you. Let's connect. And if you're interested, let me know. I'll send you a link. Right. And now it's a warm connection because they spent the time to vote on your poll.
Very true. I like how a lot of this is kind of based in getting permission to pitch, like, or not even to pitch, just to share the stuff that is yours rather than the third party. Yeah, definitely doesn't break that bait and switch that you were kind of mentioning at the beginning there. Because honestly, it does feel like a bait and switch when somebody connects with you. And then everyone's wary of getting connections and doesn't want to engage because I'm like, oh, this person is definitely going to message me asking for my time the second that I accept this connection request. Yeah. And I'm just not interested. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And a lot of times our buyers don't know they need us. And so they're not actively shopping us, these people that we're reaching out to, right? So we've got to bring enough value to the plate where you know, we've created curiosity and got them thinking a little differently about how they're going, how they're doing business. And, you know, when we plant those seeds, they're much more likely to get on a call with us than if they don't, they're not even interested, right?
Yeah.
So the resources that we offer should actually be doing five things. It should resonate with them, create curiosity, teach them something new that gets them thinking differently about how they're doing business today, and creates a compelling moment. That means they respond, they like, they comment, they ask you to connect, they schedule a call with you. Anything that creates that compelling moment allows us to move forward with the conversation.
Yeah, very interesting. One of the reasons that outbound is so hard, and now I'm talking about more traditional, like email, cold, cold, real quick, cold outbound. One of the reasons that it's so difficult, email, phone, whatever, is because you're starting with that negative trust, right? This person doesn't know you, you've invaded their space, digital space in some way, and are asking something of them, even if it's a soft ask, just like, is this something of interest to you? It's still, you're starting with negative trust. But with social selling, you can build yourself up to positive trust before you actually even attempt to make that move.
Absolutely. You have to earn the right to get the conversation.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, that's why it's so effective. That's why it's such a great strategy. Okay. The next piece the people were getting wrong was this random acts of content. So this sporadic
random acts content. Of social, really.
Social. Yeah. How do you avoid that? How do you get a rhythm going?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are lots of different ways to do this. I have a free resource that, socialsaleslink.com/day-in-the-life. And it has an ebook of the things you can do, but there's also an Excel spreadsheet. And this is totally free. It gives you like all the activities that you can do throughout the day or the week or the month, right? And you want to, so one of them, looking at who's viewed your profile. Mm-hmm. If you don't do this actively, you're missing opportunities, right? It's like not returning phone calls. So if we say, I'm going to look at this every single day at 8:30 a.m., I'm putting it in my calendar and I'm going to look at who's viewed my profile, my notifications, and my inbox twice a day. And I've got it in as an activity. It will end up kind of a habit after a while, but we say like schedule it, right? And now you're never going to miss that stuff. How long is it going to take? 3 to 5 minutes, maybe, unless there's a real prospect that you want to reach out to. And then that's okay if it takes a little longer.
Take right? time, yeah.
Because you had a prospect that viewed your profile. One of my biggest deals that I've had bigger deals since, but my first big corporate deal, I looked at who's viewed my profile and saw a PTA mom from my kid's school looked at my profile and she worked at SunGard. I didn't know that. I just thought she'd bake good cookies, right? Like I didn't know. And so if I hadn't looked at who viewed my profile, I would never have seen that she did. And then I was able to start a conversation with her and ultimately get, a contract with SunGard. This is so many years ago, but I mean, I could tell you story after story of how important that is, but random acts of social is maybe once every, couple of weeks we look at it. There's not a predictable revenue, like sales activity creates predictable revenue, right? But you have to be consistent to get there. And so, there's maybe 8 or 10 things you're going to do every week, but if you schedule it, it becomes easier and easier. Now, I have people that'll say to me all the time, I just don't have time for this. Well, I'll tell you, in 1992, I think, I was working for Dun & Bradstreet and we got email. It was called CC mail at the time. And I remember sitting inside my boss's office, Mary Ann, saying, I don't know how you guys expect me I'm so busy. I can't do this email thing too. Like, there's no way I could get this into my day and you want me to hit my numbers. Well, we couldn't do business without email today, right? And I really remember like almost in tears that they put this like albatross across my, And I think that's where social is right now. We're 1992, like social selling, you know, some people are using it, but no one really knows how to use it effectively yet. Some people are figuring it out, but I guarantee you in the next 4 to 5 years, it will just be part of selling.
Yeah. Yeah. What an interesting perspective. It's funny to make that comparison, but you're totally right, because obviously the sales landscape adapts all the time. It's all, right? It's ever evolving. And of course there has to be something else. This is not how we're going to stagnate for the next 10, 20 years. So it'll be social selling. Maybe it'll, you know, replace the cold email, because honestly, that is losing a lot of traction. And then there'll be something else. There'll be, as you mentioning, even LinkedIn changes what it's got available. There will be more changes that we can.
Right.
I'm excited to think back on this conversation 5 years from now and be like, you know what, Bryn? She told all of you that this is how it was going to be.
It's just going to be part of the fabric of what you do every day. Yeah. You're not going to think twice. And we have lots of clients that are having great success doing that. And even though initially they thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to fit this into my day? It's reduced their sales cycle and their time to conversation so significantly that, you know, again, we slow down the outreach to speed up the outcome. The outcome is much faster this way, even though it feels like more work on the front end.
Yeah, of course. I have a quick question kind of around the logistics. So when we're having these conversations in LinkedIn, and also if there's Sales Navigator involved, sometimes the conversations are kind of split over multiple different messenger functions or whatever you want to call them. And I find it's very difficult to kind of track those conversations, keep track of them, remember when I'm supposed to reach out again. What is the best way to organize your outreach? You know,
So there's a couple of things that we teach. In Sales Navigator, we try to, you know, kind of put them in some buckets. One of the things when I originally said they took away things that made me sad, tags is one of them. Mm. And tags is a way that we used to do this. So there are a few things. If you have a CRM, I'm a big fan of tracking in your CRM. Not a big fan of spreadsheets. I get lost in them, but I have one client that's doing a great job in spreadsheets. So if it works for you, then that's fine. I actually create buckets in my bookmarks. So I use Chrome bookmarks. Okay. And so I create folders inside of my bookmarks and I save profiles in different buckets, like first conversation, and then I'll move them from first conversation. So that's one way to do it. But if you're really serious in business development, we have a CRM. I actually see it's terrible because this is what I do for a living, but I'm the quintessential salesperson where when I have a proposal out, they go into CRM. Like I missed all of the, like that's, and I need to work better at that, but there are some CRMs like Nimble that can help you, keep track of, and it lives inside your email. And there's some really great things around that. So there are a lot of things that you can use to stay on top of where you are in the sales cycle with your connections.
Cool. Got it. Okay. The next piece that I really want to talk about is this profile makeover. Mm. What do you mean by that? Walk us through it.
Yeah. So I think before you do anything on LinkedIn, you have to make sure that you've converted your profile from a resume to a resource. No one cares about how many years in business, you know, that no one cares about how many awards you've won. They just don't. What do they care about? They care about if you can help them solve a problem. And the only way we can do that is to show up as a resource. So rather than talking about us, it's really almost positioned like a blog post, right? Like our about section starts with the challenge our buyers are facing and then provide insights, right? So resonate with them and create curiosity in the opening. And your headline needs to do this as well, right? But what is their challenge? What are some vendor agnostic insights, meaning they can read this and implement something right away, even if they don't talk to you, because that's real value, right? And then you have the right to say, we help people do this. If you're stuck or you just want to learn more about how you can improve on this, let's chat, even if we don't work together. I'll provide some insights that can help you get to the next level, right? When your profile is positioned that way, you're earning the right. They'll say, boy, if I can learn this from her profile, imagine what a conversation will be. And that's where we begin to earn the right. So you've got to position the profile away from who we help, how we help. Like we talk about it. I shouldn't say that, because your headline needs to be who you help and how you help them and the results you bring, because they won't know. But if the whole profile is focused on that, we help entrepreneurs do this, this, and this, they're gone. It's a pitch. But if moving from telling them how we help them to actually helping them is a great way to earn the right to get the conversation.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about writing it like a blog post and kind of providing that actual value in the about section, does that come in the form of like tips, links to great resources?
Well, the links go in your featured section.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's great. But your about section, definitely tips and strategies, anything that they can do immediately or that gets them thinking differently about how they're doing business today. Go, ooh, I wish I had that. Create a little FOMO. You'll get a phone call.
Okay.
Now your experience section, people do business with people, right? So instead of talking about the company, talk about your why, your passion. I have my Dun & Bradstreet story, right? Like what my, and how I ended up teaching LinkedIn because of, an event that happened in 1992, right? Mm. So it's a connection to you as a human being. That's what I think your experience section should be. A lot of people try to do that in the about section, but that's up higher, right? Your about section is higher up in the profile and they see that first. And if you jump into you without earning the right for them to care about you, there's an order of things.
Okay. So in that experience section, you're giving a bit of kind of like a narrative rather than
it's like your Simon Sinek function. It's a little bit of your Simon Sinek. I mean, it's totally inspired by Simon Sinek, right? People, they want to know your why, but they don't want to know your why until they know that you're meaningful to them. It's all self-centered, right? Like everything, our buyers are, if they're taking the time to vet us, to look through our profile, what they're doing is they're determining if we're worth the conversation. If we start with our why, they don't care about us yet. But if we identify, or if they've identified that we're a real resource for them, now they want to connect with us as a human being.
Yep, that totally makes sense. Okay, great. So that is profile optimization. It's all about taking it away from the resume, making it a resource, making sure that the order is appropriate, where you're providing value so that you can earn the right to talk about yourself. In your featured section, you can be providing value right there that they can click away and go, action on today. Okay, all makes sense. And then of course, the headline is the only place where you do a quick little who we help and how, like what results we get for them. Okay, great. Okay. The last piece that we definitely have to touch on, because we talked about it at the beginning. So before I let you go, let's talk about how to leverage the referrals. Let's get those secondary connections.
So it's so simple, crazy simple to search someone's connection. So we'll just talk about in the free LinkedIn, if you click on the search bar and hit enter and then hit all filters, you get, I think there's 13 filters right now, but they change all the time. The second filter down is connections of. So you can type in the name of a first degree connection and then fill out all these other filters that will identify who our prospects are, including title. And so I can go in, Sarah, if we're connected, and build a list of the CEOs that you know in the greater Philadelphia or whatever it is, right? Whatever your criteria is, and maybe I get 12 names. So I come back to you and I'm like, Sarah, I had so much fun on your podcast. Thanks so much for having me on. I happen to notice you're connected to quite a few people that I'm going to be reaching out to in the next couple of weeks. But before I do, would you mind just jumping on a quick 10-minute call and share any insights on these people before I reach out? Mm-hmm. Notice I did not ask you to make introductions for me.
Yeah.
I just want insights on people you're connected to. So we get on a Zoom call. we go through and we identify there are four of those 12 people that you think make sense. I can ask for introductions, or I can say, Sarah, thank you so much for your time in reviewing these names. When I reach out to them next week, is it okay if I mention we chatted and you thought these would be good people for me to talk to? So now I get permission to drop your name. So I go out, John, Sarah Hicks and I were chatting the other day. I start with your name. That's our, you know, immediately they're going to keep reading because I've just warmed it up with that share. Sarah Hicks and I were chatting the other day and your name came up in our conversation. That is true. She thought it made sense for me to reach out and introduce myself. Let's connect and I'll loop you in on what we were talking about. Now we connect and I go, you know, John, thanks so much for connecting with me based on Sarah's recommendation. I'd love to jump on a quick call, share a little insights around X, Y, and Z. If you're open, let me know. I'll send you a link to my calendar. And half of them will say, sure. And half of them will ghost you. Fine. Just the way it is.
Yeah, it's the way it goes. I like that. I like the messaging a lot. I like the, again, there's a lot of permission in there. You're not selling right away. It makes sense. You can see that there's going to be value coming. Yeah, that's a great strategy. I'm curious to know who of your own first degree connections, does it make sense to ask for their, because we probably, a lot of us who are doing social selling have connected with a lot of people who we're not very close to. Like I can't reach out to just any old buddy on my first degree list. So who do I pick?
So clients first, for sure. People that have referred business to you before, for sure. I would definitely start there. If you do a search, so you can do reverse search, right? Like you just do second degree connections of CEOs in the Philadelphia area, and I get 187 second degree connections, and I can see people that are my shared connections, and I may not have ever really engaged them. If you want to try it, the success rate is a little lower, but make sure you call the elephant out in the room, right? So I'm going to reach out to Sarah Hicks. I haven't talked to her in a long time. We connected 6 years ago. We haven't really engaged, but she knows Fred and I want to know Fred. And it's my only in. So what am I going to do? The first thing I'm going to do is personalize this by going to your contact information on your profile and looking at the date we connected. So it says we connected in, you know, 2015. So I come, so I see October 2015. So I come back, Sarah, I'm not sure if you recall, but we connected on LinkedIn back in October of 2015. Why do I do that? That is so hyper-personalized. There's no way that this is a spam, right? That's going out to everyone, number one. Number two, you're blown away that I remember that we connected back in 2015. You don't know how I found out that information. Most people don't. Like, wow, she remembers me from 2015. And there's a more likelihood of me responding. So, Sarah, not sure if you recall, but we connected on LinkedIn back in October of 2015. I hope you don't mind, but the reason I'm reaching out is you are connected to Fred, who I'm going to be reaching out to in the next couple of weeks. And I'm wondering, how well do you know him? Bryn, send. You would be surprised how many people go, oh, I worked with him for years, or I don't know him at all. Okay, move on. But if she comes back and says, oh, he's a great guy, I might say, would you be open to a 3-minute call to just share a little bit of insights before I reach out? And everything seems to be about a 50% fall off rate, right? So at that point, some people will ghost you, some people, but I hope you don't mind. Or would you be open? It's more comfortable, right? And so now we get on a 3-minute call. That's all I need, because I want to say, Sarah Hicks and I were chatting the other day and your name came up in our conversation. That's the line that I want to say. Now, if they come back to you and, you know, maybe you could say, you know, I don't know that I can have time to jump on a call. I'm going to respond totally. I totally appreciate that. This is the reason I'm reaching out to so-and-so. Do you think it makes sense? Let them say yes. And then my message is, instead of we were chatting the other day, right? We were sharing messages the other day and your name came up. It's not as strong as the conversation, but you can certainly use it.
Awesome. Great. Well, great strategies on how to, both go through the first degree connections that you do know, or start on the other end and start with those second degrees and go back and figure out who your firsts are. Definitely something that I think a lot of us can make better use of who are out there social selling. Cause I know that I'm not out there like purposefully leveraging my referrals. So it's definitely something that I can implement right away. And I think that's
it.
A perfect place to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Brynn, for joining us on the show. Incredible insights. Great to have the LinkedIn whisperer herself to share her knowledge on our show. If people want to learn more from you, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. That's where you're supposed to find me. And if you want free resources, LinkedInLibrary.com.
Okay. Awesome. Yep. And I'm going to definitely include in the show notes that day in the life so that people can get started right away and figure out what they can be doing every day to up their LinkedIn social selling game.
Awesome.
Thank you so much again for joining us. And thank you to all of you guys for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We will catch you next time.